anybody else pop in, but I do expect at least a couple more people to join who had other commitments and let us know that they'd be joining late. So why don't we go ahead? Thank you, everybody. It's our third meeting here of the Housing Study Advisory Committee. This one's going to be largely focused on the buildable lands inventory. But there are a few other things we want to talk about. And before the meeting wraps, I would like to kind of talk to you guys about briefly about some potential alternate dates for the next meeting. Now that we've had a chance to share our respective vacation calendars, myself and Beth and other folks over there, and the constructability assessment, we've spent more time kind of looking into that. We've come to the realization we're going to need a little bit more time to pull that information together so that it's useful for you for your next meeting. So I'd like to pick up that conversation at the end of the meeting. But where we're at right now, we do not have minutes prepared yet from the last meeting, so we'll bring them forward for the next meeting for your review and adoption. So the first thing we have on, I think, would be a brief roll call. So I'm going to just go through, just make sure we have picked up everybody who is currently participating on this. So Kathy? Calco?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I don't see Todd Woodley yet. Or Sheila. Betty?
Yep.
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
Karen Gray mentioned that she would be late. I don't see Bob Cowan or Mark Farley just yet. Wendy Hernandez? I think I saw
here.
You.
Yep.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi there.
Dr. Ogden's not here. Bonnie Saxton?
Yes.
Hey, Bonnie. Judith Jones?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Hi, Dennis. We just chatted.
Yeah.
So, I don't see Braulio from our planning commission just yet, or our council members, Cynthia Jacoby or Jan Kaplan. Okay. That's it for the roster. Next up would be the housing conversation guide discussion. Beth, do you want to go ahead and run with that?
Yeah, so I believe that Derek sent you the updated housing conversation guide. At our last meeting, you had no comments on it. You had some questions about it, but you didn't have any comments on it. And so my question for you is on the guide itself, do you have any further questions? Okay, I'm just realized that I need to sign into my Google account so I can get the spreadsheet, the document up. Hold on for one moment, I apologize. And so then we talked about how will we know who is doing what, conversation. And so Derek shared with you a link to a Google document, and was that a Google Doc or a Google spreadsheet, Nicole?
It's a Google Doc.
Okay. Let's see.
So our hope for that is that if you are aware of some different groups that we need to be reaching out to, if you could just go ahead and put them into the document, it's a, you know, the living document, those edits will be visible by everybody else. And then if there are specific groups that you feel that you can carve out the time to reach out to and coordinate with, if you could go ahead and sign up for that, we'd greatly appreciate it. And then we'll backfill in as staff. My hope is that at least a few of you will be able to do some of this outreach. Is the more of us who can do it, the broader we can, or the more, you know, good information we can feed into the process.
So this is a Google document. I don't know if there's anybody who has trouble getting to Google documents or not, or is unfamiliar with it. If so, then I think Derek would probably be happy to help you.
Yep.
With filling things in. And if you have a group that's not on here that you want to add on here, you just, you know, add another name. And then, you know, fill in the information. And once you've had the conversation, fill that in. And you send your notes from the conversation to Derek.
Yep.
Are there any questions about this?
I missed the last meeting, and I'm not sure where to link the doc. I just need the link.
If you look at the email that Derek sent on the 3rd mm-hmm. at 4:41,
yeah,
it's got the community conversation guide in it and a link to the.
Okay. I looked at the email, but just missed that particular piece of information. Thank you.
Yeah, who can keep track of it all? So is this something that people are thinking about doing? I see Betty has raised her mm-hmm. hand.
Thanks, Betty.
And
I wanted to say that there's a group that meets, it's the affordable housing group. So a lot of the homeless and those groups like Samaritan mm-hmm. House and all those are part of that group that I'm already in. So I shouldn't have too much trouble reaching out to them to see if they'll help us with this and how to get people together. So
That's the informal group. I think Cynthia's been participating in that of late. Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So between her and I, we should be able to get a bunch of them that way. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'll see what we can get set up at our Stone Soup community dinner. And also we'll work on contacting Centro de Ayuda and Arco Iris Central or Cultural to see about Latinx outreach.
Fantastic.
All right.
Judith, did you have a name for us to contact for the Hmong community? You're muted. Did you?
Yeah, I had just muted myself again. I don't have a name, but I know who has a name.
Okay.
That's helpful. Okay, so there are folk at Arco Iris who can do outreach with the Hmong community.
Okay. Well, let us know how we can help. I don't have a contact on that front. So if you need us to help with any outreach on that, I'll need to know who to contact.
Okay.
Okay. And so we are asking that you fill in this spreadsheet or this document, so that we know who's doing what conversations, and that by the time we meet next, if you have any questions about this, of course, send them to Derek as we go along, but we're hoping to have the discussions finished up by about the 1st of June, August.
Hey, we don't have the real estate community listed at this point. I mean, we obviously value and need input from the real estate community. Do you have any forums or venues coming up where either you could get some information and talk with some folks or we can help do some outreach with realtors? What's your thoughts on that?
Next Thursday we have our realtor meeting for the whole county. So
next Thursday?
Mm-hmm. I'll send you the information. It's at the Best Western. It's a breakfast meeting.
Oh, okay. I mean, obviously I know a whole bunch of realtors that do work in Newport, but yeah, it'd be great to connect up with a few more folks.
Yeah, I can see if I can get you on the program if you want to do that.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. So then I don't think there's anything else on that. Betty, you've got your hand up.
So 60 Plus Center is part of the city. Are you going to reach out to them and put some surveys over there or see if they can get a group together? because they could give you some information. I'm sure there's probably people in there that have tried to find housing and or would like downsize but can't.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good thought, Betty. We should go ahead and do that. I was also going to reach out to the manager up at Pacific Homes Beach Club.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to some of the folks up there as well. But that's a great thought.
There's a new manager at Ocean View, I think, too, who's real she's real community oriented.
Oh, up at the assisted living?
Yeah, she might have some, because, you know, there's probably a waiting list to get in there. So that might be another place to talk to, just to see if there is a waiting list and, yeah, see what's going on there. I don't remember her name offhand.
Yeah, no, that's a good thought.
Okay. Anything else you want to add right now?
I would take the help for the Lincoln County homeless students. The realtors have an ongoing program that we do fundraising for them.
So I'm not quite sure I understand your comment. You would take the help?
Yeah, the Lincoln County School District Help Program.
Got it.
There you go.
I understand.
And
thanks,
then,
Bonnie.
Sure. Are you going to kind of furnish us questions that we want to ask? Or?
So that is all in the guide that we sent.
Okay.
So it includes some stuff about, you know, what you might want to do, you know, during the event, that kind of thing, a brief agenda. But then we'll get down to the questions. So some discussion questions. And I suspect these discussion questions about the needs and barriers are going to be very fruitful. And I'm not sure how fruitful the discussion about strategies and actions to address housing need. I don't know what people will think about this, but we welcome ideas.
Okay, great. Sorry, I forgot about that.
No worries. And then there's also on here a survey.
Okay.
Fill out if they don't want to talk, especially.
Okay.
So. And you were sending your notes and any surveys to Derek. And Derek, I'm assuming that in some way we will get them all from you.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right.
Hey, Bonnie, on the realtor meeting that's coming up next Thursday, how many people typically attend that?
Oh, I haven't been for a while because of COVID. There can be 30, 40.
In that range.
The letters that come from Lincoln City all the way down through Yahats and East County.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else here? Then I'm going to move us on, and we're going to go talk about the buildable lands inventory. So let me start by saying, if you're a little lost as we start going over this, that's okay. We'll find you. This is a little bit, it's technical, I don't know, I'll call it a little bit obtuse. But if you ask questions and you try to follow along, I imagine we're all going to get there. So here's our meetings and our next sets of meetings. I'm going to skip over that. Here we are at the buildable lands inventory. So what we're trying to accomplish with this, there's essentially two stages to this. The first stage is how much land is there within Newport's urban growth boundary, UGB, where housing is allowed outright. So it's outright permitted, where you've got vacant land or partially vacant land, and I'll explain what those mean. And you don't have major constraints to development. You may have some constraints to development, but not major constraints to development. And then that gets you to the big answer. There's about 1,200 acres of that. Some of that land is just not going to develop over the next 20 years. It's just not going to happen. Some of that land has some construction, some infrastructure constraints where, I don't know, maybe it could develop, but it would take some pushing. And Derek has asked the question of, you know, given the costs of infrastructure and the costs for development, what is feasible? What's potentially likely to happen, assuming market feasibility, essentially? That whole second part is in the constructability analysis. That's going to yield us something considerably less than 1,200 acres. And as we talk about that, my intention for that is to use however much land that is and what capacity we estimate it has, is that gives you one version of how much housing could Newport, I don't know, it's more housing than Newport's likely to see over the next 20 years, because I'm imagining it's still going to be quite a bit of land. But realistically speaking, what's the outer boundary? And there may be more than one answer to that. So even though your forecast is small, you could outpace that forecast by quite a bit. So here's our theoretical piece. So we work with the administrative rules, the OARs, and the OARs tell us that buildable land means residentially designated land, so land where housing is allowed, within the urban growth boundary, and including vacant and developed land that's likely to be redeveloped. That's a little bit of a hard one. That is suitable, available, and they don't mean market available. They mean could be developed and necessary for residential uses. Publicly owned land is generally not considered available for residential uses. So we'll step through this piece by piece, how we do this. And just so you know, I recognize that the maps we'll be showing are difficult to view. So we've also got an online map viewer, which I'll go over at the end, where if anybody wants to zoom in on things and see what different parcels are identified as, you can do that. So the steps in this are to gather and assemble the data. We work with data that's primarily in GIS, Geographic Information System. Things like tax lot data, assessor's data about improvement or land values, road data, data about hillside slopes, about tsunami inundation, all kinds of data like that. So we gather and we assemble the data. We classify land into some mutually exclusive categories, which include vacant or developed. We identify and remove the constraints. Then we do a few versions of verification, and we've been through this a few times. You guys are part of that verification. If you find any errors, it's entirely plausible that there are some errors. We just hope there aren't large errors in the analysis, and then summarize the results and write it up. The next step, the constructability analysis, is about identifying land with services where development could reasonably happen, and also land without services where development could reasonably happen, and then some financial feasibility testing of different housing types. And that is next meeting. Okay, so pardon me, I'm gonna move that thing off my screen. So here you've got Newport's long thin urban growth boundary with all of the plan designations where you allow residential development. So you've got your high density plan designations in dark green, your low density in light green, your commercial is also in pink. We don't assume that all of your commercial land will develop with housing, but it's a consideration. And then here we put the plan destination resort overlay, which is actually in high density residential. We put that in its own color because it's its own thing.
Yeah, and if I could speak to that briefly, it's because that is a little bit different critter you don't see in most jurisdictions. But south of the Newport Municipal Airport, which is where that's located, we have about over 450 acres of land that was brought into the city's urban growth boundary in the late 80s, I believe it was. as the Wolf Tree Destination Resort. It was going to be a resort, golf course, commercial element, housing. And the way that overlay is set up is that it's all or nothing as a resort. So if anything's to develop down there, it has to be at such a scale that, you know, you're looking at its own packaged sewer treatment plant, water distribution system. It's like think Black Butte, you know, that kind of development like you'd have up in the Bend area. And so with our last analysis, we didn't assume anything out of there. And our approach is we're not assuming that we're going to get needed housing out of there. If that happens in the next 20 years, you would see a whole bunch of resort oriented housing. It's a bit of a unique situation.
And so what we're doing, since the city's, it's just hard to see maps this way. So we split maps into three different maps. Here we've got the north, here we've got the south, and on the next map, we put the middle because it just fits better because it's a wider map. So here we're looking at north of the city. Here is south of the city, South Beach is up here. Your airport, and then your destination resort overlay, and here is the middle of the city. So things that are not in any color, like where I'm sitting right here, this is probably zoned industrial. So it's got some other zoning on it. Okay. So then we start looking at constraints. Now we're gonna start looking at constraints before we go to the next step. So the constraints are things like combined geologic hazards. And I think Derek knows more about that, honestly, than I do. Your FEMA 100-year floodplain, your natural resource protection areas, your riparian corridors, so corridors along streams, slopes that are greater than 40%, the tsunami inundation zone, and the local wetlands inventory, which is mapped, but right now not considered a prohibitive constraint because the city does not regulate that strongly enough in and of itself. And honestly, a lot of the areas that you have wetlands in anyway are in some other constraint as well. So when we look at this, what you see, of course, is along the coast, quite a lot of the natural resource protection and the geologic hazards. And then, you know, over towards the inland areas, you see more steep slopes and tsunami inundation zones down here, as well as up here. And then more of that here. Before I go on, are there any questions about the constraints? Okay. And then what we do is we classify all of the land that is in your plan designations that allow residential outright. So we classify it into land that's developed. So land that's essentially fully developed consistent with current zoning. These are improved lots that are unlikely to redevelop in the next 20 years. It's possible that some of them could redevelop. But predicting redevelopment probability is, we'll just call it difficult. So these lots typically have an improvement value of somewhere over $10,000. And most of them, of course, have a very high improvement value on it, like a house. Then you've got your vacant lots. Those are lots that have no structures or have buildings with very little improvement value, so less than $10,000. So you might have, a garden shack on a lot. That's not considered a dwelling unit, so that lot's considered vacant. Then you have your partially vacant, which are in between. So those are lots that have an existing use, but contain enough land where you could look at a further development within your current zoning. So if you imagine a 5-acre parcel that has one dwelling unit on it. You can see how you could have more housing, reasonably speaking, on that. So that's partially vacant. Undevelopable is a very, very small category. It's essentially sweeping up the little tiny pieces that you get as a result of GIS analysis. So it's tax lots that are less than 3,000 square feet in size, just so we don't have little fragments of tax lots hanging out around. And then your public is lands that are publicly owned, including state, federal, county, or city ownerships. Could also include tribal ownerships. We also include cemeteries in this category, which aren't exactly a public use. They're more of a semi-public use, but you're not going to have a cemetery redevelop just plain. It's just not going to happen. That doesn't happen in cemeteries. So if, say, your school district owned a piece of land that they identified as surplus, it's identified as public, so we wouldn't originally consider it developable, but they identify it as surplus, we could consider it as vacant or partially vacant, whatever the appropriate designation was, and plan for housing on it. And the same is true if the city owns some land in that kind of category. So any questions right now about the classifications?
A couple things I just am hoping you can clarify or just mention, because we had talked about them as I had gone through this in terms of an initial blush on this kind of review. Were you able to pick up and identify as partially vacant those smaller properties where they have tax consolidated multiple lots and there are some of those lots, one or more of them are vacant and available for development?
Yes. And we've said, so what you've got is you've got some parcels that have an existing plat on them. I'm thinking of one that Derek gave us an example of that is a church. Where it's got a plat, where you could reasonably see if the church chose to, for parcels being subdivided out of that and for new dwelling units of capacity. We've set that off aside, those aside in their own category. There's not a lot of them, but we're counting that capacity just a little bit differently because that's identified, you know, Derek helped us identify realistically how many dwelling units you might get on those. So there's more than a couple handfuls of them, but there's not much more than that.
For those not familiar with the concept, what we're talking about is circumstances where somebody owns multiple legal lots, but they only want one tax bill. So your tax lots, what you see commonly referred to as tax lots, they're just what's represented on the tax bill for that individual. Often that's one legal lot, but that's not always the case. And we have quite a few circumstances scattered around where the multiple lots make up the one tax lot. And in some of those cases, you know, you have a house that, you know, they wanted two lots, they wanted a bigger property and they plopped the house right down in the middle. Well, neither of those lots are really conveyable unless you take the house out. But in other circumstances, people were thinking that they may sell the other lots at some point in time. They put the house on one and they have one or two adjacent to them that they hold on to. Those are circumstances where we commonly see infill development, where they either tear down the old house that's on the two lots and redevelop the two lots with a home on each or more, or somebody buys a vacant lot that somebody had next to their house and they build a new house on it. I mean, so that's a scenario we're talking about.
Dennis, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to pursue the question of public lands here. That maybe it's a question for Derek. That, you know, there are some known areas that could be opened up for this purpose, and I don't know whether that's been earmarked already or where that stands.
Yeah, we've gone down that path already. We don't have much. Almost most of our public lands are either developed with public facilities or they're steep drainages that are for stormwater management and part of kind of your park system, you know. And so, for example, we made some land available to Habitat right next to City Hall for a duplex development. That's one of the few properties we have that are available. I mean, we can go through and highlight those, but I'm guessing, you know, probably no more than half a dozen lots are, you know, in our inventory that would be suitable.
And that may be something that is part of your housing production strategy, is looking at publicly owned land and doing an assessment, whatever level of assessment you need to, of land that could be more reasonably used for housing.
You know, I don't mind doing that, Beth. We've done that before already. I think what we want to be cautious about is if we identify that is not framed in a manner that might be this fantastic solution to making a large amount of land available for housing, because it's simply not the case.
It's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's continue on. So then we classify all your land with development status, and we've also put constraints on here. So constraints are the hash marks. You see where my cursor is sitting is in the middle of the bay. Amazingly enough, that's a constrained area. So the orange that kind of looks reddish is vacant land. Your yellow is your partially vacant. Then we've got two different flavors of partially vacant. We've got a small parcel partially vacant. And then we've got the consolidated tax lots, and on the next couple of maps, you will be able to see them better. The darker gray is your developed lands, and then the green are your public land. And there's probably not much. There's a little bit that can be picked out that is undevelopable, but not a whole lot. So as we go and look at these, you can see these a little bit better. So up to the north, we've got a fair bit of land that is vacant, that is also pretty constrained. It's got some steep slopes on it. And you can see, you know, the same patterns throughout some of these other areas. And then down south, of course, you've got this land where your destination resort is highly constrained as well. We've got a little bit of public land right here. And then in South Beach, I think a lot of this may well be tsunami inundation zone. I'm not positive without looking at that map. But you can see a fair bit of constraint down here, but also a fair bit of buildable land up in the wilder sort of area. And then here's the middle of your city again. And you see the developed center where you've got those partially vacant consolidated lots and a few small partially vacant lots, as well as your larger partially vacant lots. And then some parkland in some areas. But as Derek said, a lot of that is constrained. So then in the next map, and we can hop back to these maps, we take off your constraints. So you're not seeing that anymore, and you're just seeing these essentially fingers through different land. These white areas are where your constraints are. So those white areas are not considered buildable. And then the colored area is what is considered buildable, and it's colored by different plan designation. So you've got a little bit of high density in some of these areas, a lot of low density, a little bit of commercial, and of course the plan designation overlay. You can see all of this much better on these maps. So a lot of low density residential along your edges, some low density residential and high density residential in your essentially city center, along with a little bit of vacant commercial land. The same sort of pattern down south. And this is what the center looks more like.
Hey, so, Betty has a question.
You have a question, Betty, yeah.
Yeah, real quick question. Can low density residential be converted to high density residential, or is that not allowed?
It requires a change to our comprehensive plan and zoning, but it can be done. Absolutely.
Then there are some cases in which it may be exactly the right thing to do. So if you had a piece of land that was zoned low density residential, but it was in such a great place for high density residential, and the owner wanted it to be redesignated, that's an example of a potential win-win. But I wouldn't expect you to, you know, convert, say, a bunch of this low density out along here, which is in steep slopes. I wouldn't expect a lot of that to convert, for instance. So, all right. So then, ignore that number. I didn't update that number, sorry. So then you've got 1,200 acres of land that is either vacant or partially vacant. You can see that you've got about 100 acres that is in the high density residential. We've pulled out the plan designation resort overlay. That's not counted there because we're just not counting that as really developable land, since the destination resort has a whole set of requirements that are very different than anywhere else, and it's unserviced. 642 acres of low density residential, and then 40 acres of commercial land. I wouldn't expect all of this 40 acres of commercial land to develop with housing. I expect to talk with Derek about what some reasonable assumptions are about residential development in commercial areas. And so that's where we come to. And I'm happy to hop back to prior screens and look through that.
Beth, why reflect the planned destination resort overlay there at all in terms of the acreage? I mean, it's
We don't have to.
I'd actually like to pull it out of there because it just doesn't. It's, I mean, it's so large. It, you know, at 420 acres of buildable land in there, that it really skews the numbers if somebody's just casually looking at this. I mean, that's my.
That is fine. I'm fine with that, and I would just footnoted it or put it in its own little table or something like that. Our next step after this is essentially to look, let's talk about high density residential for a moment, because I can do math on 100 pretty easily, to look at what's allowed in high density residential and the types of densities that you know, are not only allowed, but you're seeing. And let's say you're seeing 20 dwelling units an acre on average in your high density residential, then, you know, 20 times 100, that could be 2,000 dwelling units of capacity, just to do the math quickly. We probably need to caveat that because some of your land is in fact sloped, and maybe you can't achieve that kind of density on sloped high density residential land. But that's the kind of math we'll be doing a little bit later. After, well, with this and then with the constructability analysis. And after the constructability analysis, that'll give us a more reasonable estimate of potential capacity. But those are our next steps. So does anybody want me to step back? And yep, Dennis, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I know this is outside the scope, but you know, it occurs to me that a lot of people who work in Newport are very happy to live on the perimeter, and that property is unincorporated with the city. Is there anything to consider with regard to property between here and, say, Toledo, which is not incorporated at all? It's really under the jurisdiction of the county.
Well, I mean, there's going to be county restrictions on residential development in that land, and I haven't dug into any of the zoning and what Lincoln County allows outside of UGBs. Presumably most of that or all of that will be single family detached, but that's not capacity Newport would consider in its planning. But maybe
no, we can't consider unincorporated areas as meeting our housing needs. We have to plan to try to meet as much of our housing needs within our own urban growth boundary. That said, there is a housing study that was completed just, I want to say, in 2018, where it was a regional housing analysis that included the unincorporated areas. And if you're familiar with Oregon's planning laws, you know, much of what is in the unincorporated area is under what we call a commercial timber type zoning designation, and your options for housing are very limited and in many cases not available at all because you're trying to preserve the commercial timber on those properties. You have some prime ag as well, not as much in Lincoln County as you would over in the valley, but that's another one that's highly restricted in terms of housing. So you're left with these unincorporated rural areas where you do have housing opportunities, but they tend to be, as Beth said, single family detached because you don't have sewer. You can't legally have new sewer systems out there. You have a handful of old ones. Most of what you have in the unincorporated area would be septic systems, private septic systems. So that really does limit what you could do in terms of new housing. Hi, Betty.
24 acres of commercial that's buildable is not very big. And I think you guys should really hesitate to, well, buildable though. That's partially vacant. Okay, yeah, but 40, even 40 is not very much for commercial. If it's flat, I think you really want to keep it as commercial because you have no place else to go with your commercial either. So I would really hesitate to do anything with that. But I mean, it's totally up to Newport. But yeah, I would really think hard about it. It's really hard everywhere for us in Toledo too to find flat commercial land. So, you know, be stingy with it is what I'm saying.
And so what we might assume is mixed use development in a portion of the commercial land where you have residential on top of. And
that would be a great idea, especially, you know, like along Highway 101 and those areas. Yeah. That would be the best way to go about that. But, you know, like the big spot over here, which I think is by the fairgrounds, I would hang on to that one and not put residential in there and see if you can get something bigger in there for, you know, a commercial use before I would turn that into housing. With, you know, I'm seeing other places where I would put housing first is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Betty. And it's interesting because we're going through this exercise in the context of vacant or partially vacant, which we don't have a whole lot of, but we have a whole lot of underdeveloped that is ready for redevelopment. And that's not reflected in that acreage, nor is it shown on this map. But we've been spending a fair amount of time, you know, looking at what can we do to revitalize the city center area, for example, where we have a lot of vacant and, you know, underdeveloped and ready for redevelopment type properties.
Oh, that would be an excellent place for those businesses with housing above.
Exactly. And then, you know, we also have, I think, some opportunity north, for example, north of US 20 between the high school and 20, when you get at least a block removed where you've got heavy commercial zoning, a lot of older homes. There's some opportunities in that area too for additional multifamily as well.
Yeah.
And so this can all be part of the housing production strategy discussion where, you know, I haven't dug into this part of Newport's zoning code well enough, but if there's changes that are needed to the zoning code to better support this kind of development, that can be part of the housing production strategy recommendations for that.
So Beth, you know, when we've previously done some work on the commercial industrial side of it, one of the steps we went through had to do with the improvement land to improvement value, kind of that ratio.
Yeah.
Is there any reason why we might want to take a look at that to kind of flag those commercial properties that might be ripe for redevelopment that into this on an inventory basis?
Why am I making that face? So we could also do it a little bit in a little bit separate part of the analysis. Okay. Part of the reason I'm making that face is an improvement to land value ratio is you look at the value of the land and the value of the dwelling on it or the structure on it. And if your land is worth more than the structure, then theoretically that might be right for redevelopment. Mm-hmm. So if your land is worth $100,000 and your structure is worth $50,000, you can see how that could work. These ratios are real gross, and by gross, I mean big and clunky way at mm-hmm. getting at redevelopment potential because redevelopment is really complicated. And you know, even though land is worth more than the structure, you have to have an owner who's willing to have that redevelopment happen. And then you have to have somebody who wants to put the money and the effort into making that redevelopment happen. And redevelopment is hard. That all said, we could run out some of those numbers. I'd probably concentrate it, you know, up here in the area along the corridors. And we could look at it in commercial areas and just note where there is areas, especially where you've got little clumps of higher improvement to land value ratios.
The reason in bringing that up is my suspicion is it's going to show a pattern along that 101 corridor in the city mm-hmm. center area and along US 20 mm-hmm. that might be useful as background information when picking up that policy conversation of, okay, these are areas, this data supports what we intuitively know that these areas are positioned for redevelopment and are in an area that we think would be suitable for mixed use, you know, residential over retail office type project.
I just take that outside the buildable lands inventory and we can put that in a little different place in the analysis. Okay. I just hate to see you guys in some way that come back on you and say, you have to assume, I don't know who would do this, but I'm paranoid about this particular analysis because I've seen it used in ways that aren't helpful. But yes, we can do that. And we could, you know, do it something like two or three blocks either side of 101 and 20.
Okay.
So yeah. So Derek, did you want to talk about the fact, some of the things that are going on that may affect this, but may not affect it before we're done the study? I'm thinking about a land swap and I don't remember which map that would be on.
Yeah. Can you go to the north map?
Yep.
Okay. Do I still have the option to take over your cursor?
You could get that option. I think you could.
Yep, I just requested control.
Let me approve the control, and then let me put you back there. This just takes a moment to take effect.
Y'all see a black cursor moving around now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I think I'm on the wrong slide.
Here, I will take you back.
Thank you. Okay. Right here where I'm running the cursor, that's about 40 acres. It's at the intersection of 36th and Harney. You have Little Creek Apartments right up here. You have the new Windhaven Phase 1 that's just 66 units was completed here. This 40 acres... is part of a urban growth boundary land swap. We're taking this acreage here out of the urban growth boundary. You see okay. out of that destination resort site down there where my cursor's at, that goes out. This comes in. The objective here from the developer is they're hoping to do up to a couple hundred units in here of attached and detached housing. We can acknowledge that, but because it's not in our urban growth boundary yet, we can't factor it in directly. But it's worth pointing out that's been approved by our city council and is still pending with the county. It has to be approved by both and then at least not appealed by the state. So that's where it's at right now.
We might just want to make a separate little map and have a little discussion about that. And then when we talk about capacity, have a little discussion about that.
Because right now we have, you know, Windhaven and Todd, he's not on today, but would, you know, it's their project. They did the 66 units here. They've got 78 that they'll be going under construction this summer right here. And then they have another 90 plus that they intend to construct in a couple years up here in that high density dark spot right there on the map. And that will likely trigger a signal here at 101. But just so you can anticipate between that and this 40 acres, there will likely be a fair amount of residential development happening in that particular area. Is there anything else you wanted me to point out while I have the cursor?
No. Nope. I didn't have anything else. I just want people to have a sense that there's a little bit that's dynamic about this that we can talk about in different ways.
Okay.
So Cynthia joined us, I think, a little bit late. I'm not sure if we've completely lost her because we didn't have her from the beginning, but I'm happy to answer any questions that she might have.
No, I'm here. Thank you. Sorry to be late. Hope I can catch up on the maps later.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Certainly. Are there other questions? Then I'm going to pause us right here for a moment. I'm going to undoing that. So actually, I realized that I had a few more slides I wanted to go through. I will finish those and then we'll go on to where I wanted to go. So our next step is our constructability analysis. And so we're looking at where the city has existing infrastructure, like sewer lines, water lines, obviously roads, in a few cases, stormwater issues, and where housing where needed housing might be developed and financially feasible. So we had a discussion earlier today with Derek where we were selecting out some areas of the city to look at and to do some financial feasibility analysis on, as well as look at costs of infrastructure. So for instance, throughout, you know, this center area, of course you have a bunch of water lines and sewer lines. This whole area in here is well served. Derek asked us to look at one or two more urban areas to get a sense of what could be built financially feasible in an area where you have good infrastructure already. But then we were looking at some of the areas where you don't. So down in this area-ish, down in that area-ish, there were a few others.
Since we have the time, if it wouldn't be helpful for me to walk through the different areas we talked about, just to touch on each of them, because it might help folks kind of get a better sense of what we might be able to accomplish with this constructability assessment.
Sure.
Do you think you could go back to that previous map?
Yes.
That showed both. And I'll
take over again.
Okay. The first area that we want them to take a hard look at is up in Agate Beach. If you see the cursor here, it includes about 37 acres right above Surfview Village, which is up at 60th and US 101. That property is owned by Mosaic. They actually develop assisted living facilities. Their intent is to build one on part of the property, but then the balance of it, they would pursue some mix of single family or single family attached housing. And this wraps around based Surfview Village, 110 units is right here. So this kind of wraps around it. Their this isn't an area where we have some urban renewal funds. So we have a little bit more in the way of resources to apply to infrastructure in this area than we do in some other parts of the city. So that constructability assessment is going to give us a sense of, okay, if we can get the infrastructure in place here, what kind of unit mix, what kind of price points are actually achievable here? We'll also be looking at this piece up here, which is up by the Ocean View, the senior living, assisted living area. It would require a road connection through our city property where we have a water tank, but there's about, I want to say about 20 acres or more there, and then quite a bit more down in here. Those are also areas that are proximate to city services, but we don't have them there yet. And that kind of assessment would be informative in terms of, you know, what kind of housing and what price points we might be able to see happen in that area. The another area is down here by north of the middle school, back behind Forest Park. So you have Forest Park right here. This is 80 acres. We call it Bridge, I think it's, well, Bridgeview Estates. It doesn't matter, I guess, at this point. It's 80 acres. It sits up there. You know, we priced out what it would take just to get to do a Harney Street extension through here at over $45 million. This particular developer has tried for years to figure out how to get access here so they could actually do a development. This is an area where we're going to show, unfortunately, that it's unlikely that this is going to ever achieve housing that's at even price points at the high end of the market because of just the sheer cost of getting the roadway infrastructure and water and sewer and stormwater infrastructure to the property, let alone it being constructed internal to the property. This particular owner has actually been fairly engaged with the city, understands this, and may very well elect to withdraw this from the city limits because they recognize they're not going to be able to really do what they had hoped for. But, you know, part of this is educational for everybody involved too, so that people understand just because it's inside our urban growth boundary doesn't mean it's necessarily viable residential property. And I think this is one area that's going to be a good case example of why this particular area can't be relied upon for housing purposes. We'll also take a hard look at this area here and this area over here, just south of US 20. We also have a couple of small pockets over here that we're going to look at where we have underdeveloped infrastructure, smaller acreage, but could still see a meaningful number of units. In the South Beach area, we'll be looking at some of the underdeveloped properties along 35th. We'll be looking at some of the remaining capacity in Wilder. And then there's a pretty good sized property that's not owned by the Wilder developer. We call it the BGB property. It's right here. That's been on the market. It's being actively marketed. It's right below the community college, which is right here. There's a lot of viable developable land there. So that's another one where we're going to look at, okay, if we make some additional investments, you know, what could we expect in terms of housing at different price points? So that's kind of our thinking in terms of the constructability assessment. A lot of it's on the periphery, but a couple of sites are more internal as in the developed or partially developed portions of the city.
I have a question, Eric. Derek, this is Cynthia.
Yeah.
I did not see your cursor on the map when you were talking about the junior college. Is that between the college and 101, that sort of big sandy area?
Community college is right here. 101's right over here. Hopefully the cursor's still visible here. So yeah, BGB is just, this is our wastewater treatment plant is down here. The BGB is forested property immediately south of the community college.
Okay, I see it now. Thank you.
And Mike Miller Park would be right over here.
Okay, got it. Okay.
I think it's about 35 acres. Derek.
On the BGB?
Yep.
Okay. Again, a pretty good size chunk
of land. A nice size lot.
Mm-hmm. For our purposes.
So,
that's what I...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's what I had.
Okay.
Is that BGB in the tsunami zone?
Nope.
Okay.
If it was, it would be showing as being constrained here. Okay. Here, I'll just go step back here for a moment. The here's the one that would show the tsunami zone. This is the edges of the tsunami zone, and I think the BGB property is right about here.
Okay,
BGB is up here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then the next step in this, obviously we've got the constructability analysis, which we're working on. The next step in this is if anybody wants to spend any time, you don't have to, but if you want to spend any time to look at the results of the analysis and make comments, Derek will send this PowerPoint out. I probably need to send it to him first. But you can click on that link, and that takes you to a map viewer. Are you guys seeing my map here? Okay.
Yeah.
It takes you to a map viewer, and you can zoom in. So not a useful area. You can zoom in, and you can look at any particular property. And you can see information about this. This is all public information. So this particular property is zoned low density residential. Its development status is vacant. It's 0.16 acres. It's got zero buildable land because it has 0.16 acres of constrained land. You can see information about, you know, any of the different parcels. A lot of these, evidently, I'm hitting are constrained. So then let's go look at constraints. You can turn on constraints by going over here to content and turning the constraints on. And it looks rather sinister, but the dark areas are simply the areas with some form of constraint that we've talked about. So you can see, you know, this parcel here, it is, it's 0.49 acres. I'm taking the bad ones. It's got zero buildable land because it's got some constraint and it's got some committed stuff on it. So that's a terrible example. Wow, I am just doing poorly here in choosing parcels. Let me choose another parcel.
So Beth, the link you have in your PowerPoint presentation, is that the same link that you had shared earlier? Because I'd passed that along to everybody.
It is the same link that I'd shared earlier. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go somewhere that's more profitable for vacant land. I think this is more profitable. Here we are. We have, I'm really zoomed in. We have a 4.88 acre tax lot. 2.83 is buildable. 1.8 is constrained. And we're considering a quarter of it as committed to an existing use because this is a partially vacant parcel. So you can go around and you can look at, you know, all of the different parcels if you want to.
So if you have the time and interest, please take a moment to kind of pan around there. If there's any properties you think that are potentially viable that we haven't picked up, you know, we'd very much appreciate, you know, a heads up on that. We can take another look at it. Or if you have questions about any of the designations, please feel free to drop me a note.
So what I can promise you is I've never done a buildable lands inventory where there wasn't some small mistake. We tend to focus on the big mistakes and make sure we get those taken care of. Because the underlying data, it's not perfect. So if you find something that just looks erroneous, you can tell Derek. And, you know, if you tell him things like the map tax lot ID, which you can copy that right there and paste it into an email and say, hey, you know, it looks like there's this problem there. You're welcome to do that. So in terms of of next steps. We'd like you to send your comments, if any, to Derek by the 20th, because we do need a deadline. Dennis, I'll get to you in just one second. And we're starting the constructability analysis. Dennis, what can I do for you?
For one very specific example, Derek, and maybe this was part of your question about conversion of some properties, but right around Herbert Street and 101, there is that whole block there, some of which has county-owned property, I take it, which is vacant and which you had speculated was, you know, going to be kind of up for grabs. How was that classified in this analysis? And then I guess the second thing, if you've got time, although I can deal with it later, I didn't realize that the property, the developable property of 420 acres that you were talking about earlier was so big. And, you know, if you don't mind, maybe tell us why that's hands off.
Okay, we go. That's the destination resort site. Yeah, the 400, that guy.
Yeah.
That is well beyond what we can serve with public service, with the city's sewer system. It's actually not in our water jurisdiction. It would be Seal Rock water down there. That whole area was brought in to the urban growth boundary of the city of Newport with the expectation that it would only develop if it were to develop as a destination resort. That was a whole justification for bringing that giant chunk of land in the first place. And so it carries with it a very strict limitation that basically says it's a multi-million dollar destination resort with its own wastewater treatment plant and all of its own internal infrastructure, or it's nothing.
We don't have the money to do infrastructure.
So it looks like, it looks like it's wetland. Is it wetland?
No, that's steep slopes.
There's some steep slopes down there. There's a creek that runs through there, so there's certainly some wetlands down there, but there's a lot of developable land down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But you're saying that the infrastructure requirements are just too much, out of the question.
Oh, yeah.
Your sewer comes down to, I think it was somewhere down around here. Derek, am I pointing about the right place?
Yeah, to get sewer to the airport and Surfland, which is north of this, you're looking at upwards of $7
million. And so then to get it down to here,
it'd be even more. And that's not factoring in, if we get it down there, you're looking at such a level of development for a destination resort that you would be looking at pretty substantial upgrades to the city's wastewater treatment plant, in addition to just getting the piping down there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And what about the Herbert Street or the 101?
Yeah. What we were talking about earlier is that developed land doesn't get picked up on this inventory. That's why, you know, when we were looking at commercial, all you're seeing is 40 acres because we don't have a whole lot of undeveloped or lightly developed commercial property. We have quite a bit of commercial property, though, that's, you know, what we would say, you know, past its useful life or underdeveloped, where the value of the improvement is very small in comparison to the value of the land. And those are areas, you know, along the city center area, along US 20, where they're well positioned for redevelopment with strategic investments, where we could reasonably see multifamily housing, mm-hmm. you know, on second or third stories and, you know, commercial or office on the first floor. And so while you're not going to see it on these maps, that's where we were talking about maybe doing a separate map that gets at the land to improvement value kind of ratio and shows these areas that are likely to redevelop so that it can inform the policy discussion we're going to have about, do we need to change, you know, some of our commercial zoning so it's over to multifamily, or, you know, what areas are we going to really kind of focus in on to try to get more mixed use development?
Okay. Yeah.
So not on these maps, but definitely still part of the a significant part of the conversation.
Yep. So are there other questions? So then heading back over here, the housing conversations, hoping to have them complete by August 1st. We wanted to talk about an alternative date for the July 21st PAC meeting, because we need just a little more time between now and then to get the constructability analysis together. We were looking at July 27th or July 28th. That is a Tuesday and a Wednesday, or August 4th. I forget which day of the workout.
No, 27th and the 28th would be a Wednesday or a Thursday.
Wednesday or Thursday, I apologize.
And then the 4th would be a Thursday.
The Thursday. I think we were hoping to get a sense of what works for who. Betty, do you have a comment?
I can't do the 27th Wednesday night as our city council meetings in Toledo.
Okay.
Karen?
Yeah, August 4th is good for me. I'm not in Oregon the 27th or 28th. I'd love to do it in August. And I'd also like to maybe have a conversation with somebody about setting up a housing conversation in July.
Let's return to that housing conversation in July in a moment.
Okay.
How does August 4th look for other folks? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs down.
Any of them are fine.
So then I think, Judith, you were not available on the 4th?
I'm actually going to be in Mexico from the from July 23rd through August 6th.
Okay, so none of those options would
have
worked.
Yeah, I'm just kind of out of the picture for that 2 weeks.
Dennis, would you be available as her backup?
Yeah, I'll be around.
Okay. So maybe we land that on the 4th of August then.
Derek, do you want to float it out there any further than that for folks who aren't on the call? Or do you want to just say, those who are here get to make the decision?
Yep.
All right, we'll move that to August 4th then. Appreciate your flexibility on that.
Hey, Karen, the housing conversation in July, what are you thinking?
Well, I really want to be a help to the process.
Yeah.
And I think that the way the school district could be useful is in hosting some kind of housing conversation with partners. I just need help with it because I don't really know what to do, but I'm really good at parties. So I think I could we could really have fun and have it at the district office and even do snacks and beverages and do table groups. And I'm kind of old school Portland, you know, where they do the table groups and you have your dots and you do all that stuff. And I would love to host one of those around the third week of July. So I know we'd like to have them done by August 1st. Maybe there's somebody I could get together with in order to make that happen. I have staff over the summer, so we could make that happen.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So you're thinking about reaching out to parents and students? Is that kind of what you're...
Yeah, and we have all kinds of partners. So I think maybe you tell me if the partners that you'd like me to hone in on are more students and families. I'm super happy to do that.
I think that's fantastic. Hey, Beth, can you...
Yeah.
Do you still have that link to the Google Doc?
Yep.
Karen, before you had a chance to join in today, we spent a little bit of time talking about the housing discussion and who's volunteering for what.
Great.
So So, Derek, I would imagine that you guys could choose a couple of the groups off of this who might not be otherwise engaged in addition to parents. Like, I'm thinking people with disabilities.
Well, I'm thinking the school district's own employees, okay. too.
Yeah, we have 700 of them.
I mean, they're a major employer, and we hadn't really talked about, I mean, we have PAC Seafood listed, but why don't we just add the school district as an employer? And then employer and parents, that would seem to cover a pretty good swath there. Excellent.
Betty, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I think you need to include the hospital too with one of those, because I know they've been here before, but I don't see them tonight. And I really think that if they had a meeting like that, because they've had problems keeping doctors and nurses and everybody else here because of the lack of housing. So you might want to directly engage with them to see about having a group with just their employees too.
Yeah, we should reach out to you. I'll drop Dr. Ogden a note on that.
Okay. Other things people want to discuss here?
Hey, before we leave this, we didn't mention it, but there's also below the list of the housing conversation. This is where folks can drop in examples or articles that you want to share with the group. So I know, Cynthia, you had posted one or two of those.
Yes.
I dropped one in too on the Portland ADU tour. Accessory dwelling units are often pushed out there as a viable housing option. But what's pretty eye-opening when you read that article from the Oregonian is the cost of some of those different options, And when you're looking at $300,000 or more just to construct an accessory dwelling unit, Cynthia.
Has there been any interest in Newport for the ADUs? I know it started off very slowly.
Yeah, we typically see anywhere from 3 to 5 of them a year right now. So it's not a large number. Mm-hmm. What you saw there with the Portland example, your price per square foot is a little more favorable when you're just doing converting a garage to an ADU or something of that nature. But if you're looking at a freestanding independent home, some of those options and a number of those, have been kicked around. Oh, this is a great concept. Convert a cargo container into a house. Well, those are still very, very expensive by the time you have a finished product. And that's what that article is kind of showing.
Betty?
Hey, Betty.
I added the county strategic housing plan in there because there's a lot of good information in it. Even, it applies to the whole county, but there is some really good information. It was finished in 2019.
Oh, it was a year off. Thanks.
Yeah. So it was finished fall of 2019. So yeah, it has some really good information, and the county is just now, I think, starting to look at actually working on some of them. So sadly they're behind. They didn't jump on it, but I've been looking at it since it came out because there is some good information in there. So have a look.
And Karen, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I think also Betty is really helping me think. There's two other groups that we have very tight relationships with, and that is with our homeless youth. Mm-hmm. We have an entire homeless program called the HELP program in our whole county. And we have a brand new director for that program. And not only that, but at this event, I would love to invite, this could be at a second event, our Hispanic family, Guatemalan family units. We have a liaison who is working with our county's families.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it all in three languages. And we have a spectacular trilingual interpreter, Estella from Corvallis, who works with us. Would you be interested in seeing, well, it ostensibly could be actually these three events. It could be staff and employees, families and children, and homeless, and then also Hispanic. We have capacity to do either one event or two events or whatever it is you think would make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. On the, you know, reaching the Hispanic population, yeah. You said with a kind of a Guatemalan members of the community?
Yeah, Hispanic families, Guatemalan families.
Oh, so they're two separate?
No, we would do them together. Because
we
have a trilingual interpreter.
Got it.
She can do them all together.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Now, Bonnie, before you joined, had mentioned that she had some interest in engaging with the HELP program as well. Bonnie, can you elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that much about it. I just know we fundraise it for it every month. But I'd be happy to work with Karen on doing any of those programs. Sounds like she's got more contact than I do on that. But I'd be happy to help the gang.
Okay, great. Even if you just want to help. Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
I'll just, you know, write y'all down here and you can decide how you want to do it.
Betty, do you have something else?
Yeah, I just thought of another group. We should probably reach out to DHS for the foster kids that are aging out of foster care, because they have interesting needs, I think. And you know, they think they're ready to be on their own, but once again, they're very young adults. So, you know, I think about them as a group that would benefit from like a hub situation where the apartments have shared facilities and things like that.
No.
But I don't know for sure, because some of them don't get along with other people either. So, you know, but that's something that the foster, you know, they could do their own little group with them too, and have them fill out surveys.
The HELP team in our school district is also our foster liaison.
Well, good.
So we've already got that covered.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. We can cover that, but I like your specificity in bringing that up and why you brought that up.
Uh-huh.
I think the reason why, the rationale, is just excellent. And our HELP coordinator, he does both. So he does homeless youth, unsheltered youth, and foster care.
Yeah, well, being a I was a foster parent, so I get the craziness of the whole situation there. They're definitely different from a lot of high school kids that you'll meet. So they're very independent, a lot of them, and so they want to think they can handle it, but they can't always.
Wendy's quietly signing up to help on a few of these also. I'll just point that out.
No. Hey, Cynthia, Betty had mentioned that she'd like to tackle one of these discussions with the Affordable Housing Work Group. Is that something, I know you still participate in those discussions. Is that something you guys could coordinate on?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
That would be something I could work with. Yes, absolutely. I'm looking at some of these other groups and I don't really have the connections, but if you need a person,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can always call on me to step in and be there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'll be happy to work with Betty on that.
Did I see anonymous chipmunk?
it's a silly thing.
Okay.
it's, you know, we've it's just people, you know, who are on Anonymous Frog, Anonymous Raccoon.
Got it.
It's just what Google does. I apologize about the train. So thank you all for talking about this and filling this in. Are there other groups we want to talk about here?
What about the college kids, or are those pretty much taken care of by OSU? The students.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. And we probably ought to put that up there and double back with Bob and Mark on that, because they weren't able to make it today.
Yeah, that would be OCC and OSU.
I was going to say, Betty, I would not say OSU would take care of it, because in this community, a lot of the housing issues are around the OCCC students. And while Brigitte is not on the team, she'd have a lot to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
She really would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know, Derek and Beth, all the housing conversation meetings with the community have to be done by August 1st. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, by our internal schedule.
Okay.
If there was some value in doing something a little bit later, I don't think we should prohibit ourselves from doing it.
Yeah. I'm glad for the deadlines, because it really helps me to get ready for my action plan.
That's a deadline, Karen.
Yeah.
No going back past it.
Yeah. I'm going to make, there you go, Beth. You know me already.
You got to be flexible, but you got to do what works for other people. All of this information, I think, is honestly going to be more helpful in the housing production strategy. So I'm less worried about exact deadlines as it relates to deadlines around the housing capacity analysis. So, but we've said, August 1st, so you must stick to that.
I have a question about the Coast Guard housing. I know they have some dedicated duplexes on the road behind Fred Meyer's. I don't know how many units there are. Do you know, Derek?
Quite a few. When I was going through the this buildable lands inventory, I had a chance to take a look at all those units. They've got a bunch there, and then they have a couple others that are elsewhere. I think they had one on, I want to say, in and around San Bayo, and then another one elsewhere too. But the bulk of them, Cynthia, as you said, were back behind Fred Meyer. I want to say it's around a dozen units total. It's 10 to 12. It's in that range.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they think they have enough housing, or if they might build some more somewhere if we showed them buildable land. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we'd have to reach out and talk to them to kind of see what their current situation is on that.
But would that be something that you would do, or?
Yeah. I can do that.
Okay.
Derek, I think also with, if part of what you're looking at is having, an email conversation, that kind of thing, I think that we can also get some help from here on a few of these if a simple conversation is going to do it. Nicole, I'm thinking we can get some help from Amanda, on a few of those things where it's less in depth.
Okay.
I think we have a similar conversation to be had with Pacific Seafood and Mike Malucci over there, who's been working to try to come up with some solutions on their seasonal housing needs. They took a run at one of our retail buildings to try to convert it into dormitory housing. It didn't work out price-wise for them, so they kind of are regrouping and rethinking what their strategy is. I think we have a few stakeholder engagement meetings that need to be set up with Lola and a few others where we can weave in some of these questions as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Then I think that we've done it, unless you guys have something more you want to talk about. I appreciate the iterations here. Well, then, thank you all. A lot more of this will start to become apparently clear as we get a little bit further on. So thank you for putting up with the wonky buildable lands inventory discussion.
Thank you very much.
Certainly. Okay.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Goodbye.